books. Divorce one, you just can't see. Cities in the boot camp, cinema floor. If he comes back, you'll get nothing more. Turtle for land for country for freedom. All you my people, if someone didn't lead them. Wake up to the same old shit. Many lies and new deafness. Some people, they don't like your hair. But these they just don't care. Snipers that wanna be. Drive for strike or enemy.
I'm talking with Heath Mattioli and David Spicone about their new book, Disco's Out, Murder's In, the true story of Frank the Shank and LA's deadliest punk rock gang. Where did the idea for this book come from, and how did the two of you hook up with Frank, whose stories the book is based around?
Okay, well, we explain it in the prologue. We were at a funeral for a kind of a legendary Hollywood guy. He was a punk rocker, and he had a smaller outfit called LWP, which was Lakewood Punks. And he passed away. So, obviously, we went to his funeral down in Long Beach and happened to run into Frank. We'd met him years prior to that. Dave knew him a little bit more intimately than me, but we just started... talking, or he started talking and telling us the story of the deceased, something we've never heard before. We thought we've heard everything about Mike, and one thing led to another, and next thing you know, we're interviewing Frank for 5.5 years, and I guess that's where it all started from.
It's also important to keep in mind that if you grew up near or around the punk scene back then, that all this violence and mayhem was something that you experienced and felt and knew intimately. So only hearing Frank's story, we just knew that we had to tell it.
Right, and originally the two of you wanted to write a book about all of the LA punk gangs during the 80s. Why did you choose to focus on Frank and his gang, the La Mirada Punks?
Well, that's what it was. We started hearing Frank's stories that day and then started interviewing him. We had to talk to him about the idea, and that was, hey, let's do a story on all these punk rock gangs because we've heard so many stories. We have other friends that are in other punk rock gangs. And we just heard so many stories. It was such a crazy time in L.A., and we just thought those stories have never been told. We only heard the musician side of it. We haven't heard from the trenches side of it. So the more we spoke with Frank, the more we realized how special his story was. And at the same time, talking to a couple other punk rock gangsters from the time, his story seemed a little bit more extraordinary, and he was willing to maybe kind of tell you the whole story more than some of these other guys. And then we realized, hey, let's just narrow it down to just Frank. And his time in LMP, and not make it so broad.
Frank's story was very particularly magical, and it encompassed the whole thing. And we always knew LMP was just a bit more treacherous and deadly than the rest, and that was just something that was always out there.
Yeah. And LMP kind of had an old school gangster influence in a couple of different ways. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, they grew up in La Mirada is obviously a suburb of Los Angeles, and it borders East LA. And like any of these kind of working class, lower middle class to low class neighborhoods, had that, you know, gang thing happening, whether you're Afro-American or you're Latino or even some of these, I guess, Asian gangs and Filipino gangs. And they had a big kind of Latin Cholo Chicano influence, you know, that kind of has been in the neighborhood for years. Santino's dad was still gangbanging back then, so he served as not only a father influence, but in a way taught guys how to be shot callers. Same time, you have Frank's father, who had
significant LA mob ties, and so subsequently that whole old-timey mafia ethos ran through it. But it's, you know, Frank and these guys, it was just so natural to start a gang because they grew up around, you know, gang violence. You know, a shooting around the block, a stabbing on their street, that's all they knew. Mm-hmm. And punks needed protection back then, so why not form a gang?
Right. You guys talk about this a little bit in the book. How was the this 80s LA punk scene affected and shaped by the national mood, the politics of the time, and the Reagan era?
I think the key word is nihilism. And with the nihilism of the Reagan era and the Cold War, that as a teenager, you just interpreted everything as, well, world's going to be gone any minute. Somebody's going to push the button. So that definitely propelled a lot of the violence, as well as music shifting, and the whole hippie movement is going away. And so all these kids, it was a very particular time of dysfunction, disillusionment, felt that they were beaten, stepped on, so it was time to fight back.
And at the same time, you know, what was happening in Los Angeles, you know, trickling down from Reagan into Gates, Daryl Gates, and they weren't going to put up with anything, you know. So
NWA in the Straight Outta Compton movie explored the Gates thing. Just remember that the police attacked punk rockers just as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the physical geography of LA and Orange County, the sprawl and the diversity and everything, how do you think that played a role in the whole LA punk scene and then the gangs kind of forming within that? I was surprised how many different gangs there were. Like, I had only heard of the Suicidal Gang pretty much being a total outsider.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, even in a small area like New York, there was tons of gangs. I don't know if the sprawl has anything to do with it, but it might. But, you know, that's the thing. Suicidal had a certain look. Whether they turned their hat up and they wrote Suicidal or V13 on it, everybody knew who Suicidal was. Everyone knew who the LA Death Squad was by their insignia, their armbands. FFF, Circle One, everyone had their own look. See, LMP didn't. They weren't as artful, I guess, with their approach. So they just looked like a mix between, you know, like a kind of a hybrid surf punk thing meets a cholo. Mm-hmm. So a lot of guys didn't know they had a bunch of LMP guys around them. And it's funny because that's what's happening right now. Some of these articles are coming out and there's, you know, people are mentioning, you know, that we see as many numbers of LMP as we did Suicidal or Lads, but guess what? They were there, if not more than any of these other gangs. But they were just a little bit smarter, a little bit more of a gang mentality that they're creeping. They're not going to let you know who they are.
No, I was just going to say, in regards to the sprawl that you're talking about, everybody has their own hometown team. LMP was the hometown team for that whole kind of edge of East LA suburbs. Everybody had a band. Theirs was Youth Gone Mad. So just the diversity and size of Los Angeles definitely gave rise to the amount of gangs and crews and gangsters there were.
Right. And how did Orange County fit into this whole scene as far as the kids from there and the bands from there?
Well, I mean, I can't really speak much on Orange County, but I do know that they had their own problems. They had their own suburbs with these gangs. You know, a lot of them stayed in their own, you know, pocket, and they didn't really come to Los Angeles. And if they did come to Los Angeles, they just kind of chilled out. They didn't come en masse. There's a little bit of I'm not sure. I hear these stories of these HBers, and I think what it is inner city punks, people that grew up in Hollywood or really close to here in Los Angeles, they assumed anybody they didn't know was coming from the beach. So all this violence, you know, oh, they're beach punks, they're HBers, but they weren't. They were coming from, you know, everywhere, all the suburbs, from the valley to out to East LA, towards Orange County, and then the other way down in the South Bay as well. But, you know, there's a misconception that they all came from, you know, the beach.
Did the cops at the time have a good grasp on what was going on there, with all these gangs as far as how organized it was? Or did they kind of just think it was, you know, typical kids causing trouble?
Maybe more of the latter. LAPD did come to shows. LAPD usually were responsible for the riots, the way they reacted to the crowds. But when it came to basically bodies being littered a bit all over the city, violence was so prevalent in L.A. at the time, they never really could put two and two together. And by the time they did, punk started evaporating. Police didn't really catch on until the 80s were about over.
Yeah. Now you guys were on the periphery of the L.A. punk scene during the 80s. How would you describe the shows to people who weren't there and didn't experience that?
Well, just the few I went to, just complete, you know, chaos. Massive shows from the Olympic to Fenders, you know, just kids coming from everywhere. I mean, I don't think there's ever been anything like it, and there never will be anything like it. You know, especially from a kid's perspective, it just felt like it went on and on for miles, the size of of these shows. And, you know, but even some of the backyard parties I went to, it was scary, man. There was always that feeling in the air that someone was going to get hurt. And that's why I was on the periphery, and I didn't want to fully commit myself. You know, I came from a little bit more of a loving family, and, you know, sure, I was angry, you know, but not violent like these guys. And it was just in the air, you know, whether it was a show or a party. And a lot of times that when I heard that LMP was coming or another gang was coming or going to be there or there, I would just leave.
Yeah. You know, Frank and his gang, they were super violent. They'd committed all these crimes, including murder, before they were even out of high school. What do you think drove these kids to murder and all these other horrible crimes?
Well, if you look back at it and you really examine their attitude, they just took... Somebody was going to take an extreme position, and it turned out these guys did. That position being, they looked at stabbings and, well, if he dies, he dies, as no different than a beatdown. You could probably say, being so close to so many shootings and so many stabbings in their own neighborhoods, that it just really, it was one big blurred line. So, unfortunately, it just came natural to them. And these kids were, you know, a lot of them, most of them, the ones we interviewed, physically and mentally abused, man. So, you know, it felt natural to, you know, make you feel some pain. And then sometimes things got out of hand and some lives were ended. Unfortunately.
You guys spent over 5 years with Frank collecting his stories for the book. What is he like now? And is, you know, does he look back on this with a lot of remorse, some of the things that happened?
Yeah, you know, Frank teeters back and forth all the time. You know, a lot of times, a lot of regret, definitely. Then other times he's just like, those were the rules. You know, that, you know, we were at war, you know, and he looks at it like that. But maybe sleepless nights, and we definitely made him reopen up what he kind of lacked out. And he found, you know, religion, and he kind of just left that all behind with that. But we forced him to kind of open his eyes again, and with that came back all, you know, the pain. So he's definitely changed again, and he's definitely in a different place now than he was 5-6 years ago when we started this process.
Right. Was it hard to get other people to talk about these incidents when, you know, because I know you guys did a lot of research and interviewing people over and over again?
Not from his gang, and you know, and some of the other gangsters we spoke with from these other punk rock gangs. Again, we just started getting to know them. They started throwing some stories around.
then we just called it off, and we didn't want to interview anybody but Frank and LMP. So, you know, once we got Frank's trust, you know, he opened up completely, and then so did some of the other guys from his crew.
Right.
What took about a year was, simple fact is, they're just hard to find. And so it took a lot of find this guy, talk to this guy, meet this guy, ask this guy. And so that was a long and kind of exhausting part of the process as well. And adding to, you know, kind of going into, adding and going kind of a different direction with this, you know, it's interesting with the press this is getting, and it brought a lot of old, you know, punk rock gangsters out, and now they're willing to tell their story. So we're really hoping this spawns other books, so they can tell their stories. You know, this was just Frank's story. You know, with that King of the Hill mentality, he felt LMP was the deadliest and dangerous and most, you know, the craziest gang out there. But I'm sure, like all gangsters, they look at themselves and their own gang as that as well. But we're just going off of the stories we heard as kids, and it all kind of came back to LMP. All the real extreme ultra-violence was coming from them.
Right. And I know there's been a lot of debate about this, and I've just been reading different comments and, you know, on stories about this and stuff. And do you guys think that the gangs ruin the punk scene, and what's Frank's take on that?
Well, I think it's definitely a big part of it. Violence ruined the scene for sure, and the gangs were the driving force behind that. So, and Frank definitely feels that. At first, when we first started interviewing him, he didn't really believe that. And then the more he kind of looked at his own life and his own deeds, he takes ownership in the fact that, punk rock gangs helped to ruin the scene. And people came up to him for years and would say to him straight up, "Man, your gang, LMP, you know, I quit punk because of you guys."
It's pretty unquestionable in the end, just due to the nature of the violence, that, you know, you go to shows and it was just way too sketch. So it was just bound to implode. So violence, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you think there's anything comparable to that scene today? Is there anything out there that's even remotely like that?
No way.
Yeah, no way. It was a different time and place. It couldn't happen today. I know that, you know, the punk rock gangs are back. I've been reading a bunch about that. LMP never went away. They always existed. And there are shows, and apparently there is violence. But, you know, with, you know, all the cameras everywhere, and, you know, I just don't think, you know, this could ever happen again, no.
Because even just the use of DNA, that it's just too hard to trace these things back. And, you know, police work as well. Cops just didn't really, you know, they cleaned up crime scenes and blood with, you know, bottles of Coke. I mean,
right, to clean up the blood. But, you know, it's not just the violence aspect that it couldn't happen today. But, I mean, that was a big mystical, you know, thing that was happening. All of a sudden, whoa, what's this sound? Whoa, you know, people slamming in a giant pit and trying to kill each other the way the news is covering it, very sensationally. I mean, it was from Mars. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, this it could never happen again. There's nothing out there like this, no.
Yeah, and in regards to the news, you know, the hysteria definitely fed back into the violence as well, because they could look at their actions and just go like, wow, look what I did. You know, I destroyed something. I control this.
What did people out there who kind of were part of the scene think of, like, media representation of the whole scene?
They thought it was a joke, you know? West Coast is pretty anti-everything anyway. Mm-hmm. Everything sucks. They're never portrayed properly. You know, I think they touched on it pretty damn perfect with, Decline of Civilization, you know, Penelope Spears documentary. But outside of that, they never covered it right. The news, you know, and then, you know, like Chips and Quincy and all these, like, yeah, really, really bad portrayals of what was happening in the scene. And again, the scene would move so quick. It was crazy. So one minute, it's this.
blink of an eye, a couple months later, it's that. And that's how LA moves in general still today. LA, in a sense, too, is very self-serious about things. So looking at all the media coverage and the TV shows, it was just something to get drunk and laugh at. For some reason, you know, the musicians and, you know, they people just don't want to talk about it. You know, and I'm starting to realize that it's not that they don't want to talk about it. They just don't know much about it. So they're just kind of, you know, putting it under, you know, the carpet. You know, they don't, the shine is off of them, so to speak. So people don't want to talk about this aspect of it. And that is what I'm finding very interesting. And again, going back to what I said, we really hope this opens up some other, you know, documents, some other books, some other stories from the trenches.
Wild in the streets, running, running. Wild in the streets, running, running. Wild in the streets, running, running. Wild in the streets. In the heat of the summer, better call out a plumber. Turn on a steam car. Cool me up with your big crime fighters and your newspaper writers. Still need a drug store to cure my buzz. Wild in the streets, running, running. Wild in the streets. Running wild in the streets, running, we're running wild in the streets. Got a 64 Valiant, handful of volumes, couple of beers really do me right. Well, you better believe us, better trust us. Teenage job, fucking rap. Wild in the streets, running, we're running wild in the streets. Wild in the streets, running, we're running wild in the streets.
This is America. How's your favorite son? Do you care just what he's done?